It's 8:04, and broadcast of the 8 o'clock hour is supported by iPeak, located on Saranac Avenue in Lake Placid. Personalized service and choosing eyewear to fit individual lifestyles, open Tuesday through Saturday, iPeakOptical.com. And Steward Shops, located throughout the North Country, helping to provide listeners with quality programming through their underwriting support of this station. This is North Country Public Radio, and good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, a leading expert on wilderness management quit the Adirondack Park Agency Board in protest last month. We'll hear more on his decision in just a few minutes. First, here's news from North Country Public Radio.
New Yorkers age 65 and older and those who are immunocompromised can now sign up for a COVID-19 vaccine. That's the state's rollout of the vaccine so far has been rocky, with reports of hospitals throwing away vaccines.
Here in the North Country, for example, the Jefferson County Health Department is canceling its two clinics scheduled for today and tomorrow because a shipment of vaccines didn't arrive. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's reluctant to add the new categories of New Yorkers because there aren't enough vaccines yet for frontline workers and residents who are older than 75. But he says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now says people 65 to 74 should also be given priority.
I don't want New Yorkers to think that we are not doing everything we can to make them eligible for the vaccine, because I want to keep people in New York as calm as we can keep people in these anxious times. And I don't want people to think that people in any other state are eligible when they are not.
Even though people with compromised immune systems are also eligible, Cuomo says the state still needs to define what that means, since the federal government does not specify what conditions are included. Under the new rules, 7 million New Yorkers now eligible for the vaccine, but the state is receiving just 300,000 doses a week from the federal government.
Meanwhile, the spike in COVID-19 cases here in the North Country continues, with daily new cases of COVID-19 dwarfing peak days in the spring. David Klaus is the chief medical officer of the Elizabethtown Community Hospital.
In the last 30 days in northeastern New York, the daily number of new cases per population has increased fourfold.
Klaus spoke at a video briefing last Friday, which included county health directors and medical staff from regional hospitals. New vaccine sites are opening up across the North Country. St. Lawrence County is setting up 5 clinics in Governor, Star Lake, Messina, Ogdensburg, and Potsdam. According to a press release from the county health department, the Potsdam site will be a large-scale vaccination location.
The county is also making sure residents who are in one of the priority groups but don't have consistent transportation are able to get vaccinated. Still, David Klaus with the Elizabethtown Hospital says we can't just treat our way out of the pandemic with numbers like these.
We also are not going to be able to vaccinate our way out of this quickly enough to avoid significant tragedy. We have to prevent our way out of this pandemic with simple measures that we know.
County public health directors are saying the same thing. Our Amy Feiereisel has more.
John Canoza is Clinton County's public health director, and he's got contact tracers working 7 days a week, trying to slow the community spread of COVID-19.
They can no longer connect with all new cases on this specific day that they receive test results.
That's because there are so many new cases, which they're directly tying to Christmas and New Year's Eve gatherings. Canoza says residents cannot expect public health to slow the spread of COVID-19 alone.
Our contact tracers are hearing from residents these days that they were expecting to be called, but they figured, well, I'm going to be out in the neighborhood and do what I have to do in the community until they have heard from us. This is very disappointing and is contributing to the spread of COVID-19 in our community. You do not need a public health order to separate yourself from others. If you have tested positive or you know you have been exposed to a positive case, please stay home. and away from others.
Linda Beers, Essex County's public health director, described the rising numbers in the North Country as a steady and persistent increase since Thanksgiving.
We've had 2 to 4 cases a day prior to Thanksgiving. We're now at 25 to 30 cases. Each one of those cases are identifying at least 5 people. That number is going up. That's why we know people are gathering. But let's just even go with 5. 30 cases a day times 5 close contacts, that means roughly for Essex County, we're putting 150 people a day in quarantine. You can see why this is not sustainable.
Beers and Canoza say all the old measures still apply, but are more important than ever before. Wear a mask that covers your mouth and nose when you go into public. Wash your hands. Keep at least 6 feet between yourself and others who are not in your immediate household. Beers also says to really evaluate the time you're spending in public and in the presence of others.
Reducing your time in public settings and stopping gathering is one of the quickest ways to stop the spread of this. Every time you leave your house, every time you're in public, consider that somebody there is positive and that you're being exposed.
With the current high and increasing number of cases, Beers implores the public to keep their circle as small as possible. Ideally, just the people you live with.
Don't expand it. Don't say, oh, I'm going to go and this is a family member and I can include them. Every time we do a contact tracing, people repeatedly say, I thought you were going to call. I was at that birthday party. I was at that dinner party. These are gatherings of small numbers, often family units that believe it's safe to do that.
She says it's not. Public health's message is very direct. COVID-19 is here and spreading quickly. Don't gather, minimize your time in public, and stay home if you're sick. Amy Feireisel, North Country Public Radio.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says New York must consider ways to reopen sectors of the economy smartly and safely. Governor delivered his remarks as part of a second installment of his State of the State address yesterday.
We can't float along watching the pain, the hardship, and the inequality grow around us. That's not what we do in New York. We must take control of our destiny.
The governor says the state will create hundreds of new pop-up rapid testing sites. Together with the state's vaccination campaign, he says the increased testing should allow the state to reopen restaurants and other businesses.
Cuomo said the state will launch a jobs program in partnership with companies who will commit to more training programs for low-income workers. The governor said SUNY will also be expanding online certification programs for jobs in high demand. The governor said the state will also launch a campaign to support the arts and culture sector, which will stage events around the state beginning February 4th at venues where spectators can socially distance. From Albany, Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo says the New York State Council on the Arts will begin sponsoring pop-up performances as early as February with 150 artists in outdoor venues like state parks.
We cannot wait until summer to turn the lights back on for the arts and provide a living wage for artists.
Performers include Amy Schumer, Chris Rock, Wynton Marsalis, and Renee Fleming, as well as Ballet Hispanico, the Albany Symphony Orchestra, and the National Black Theater. The governor says as the pandemic has dragged on, too many artists have been out of work for too long. He says a study by the National Endowment for the Arts found 52% of actors, 55% of dancers, and 27% of musicians were out of work in September of 2020. And he says in New York City, the arts and culture industry accounts for 500,000 jobs and generates $120 billion in economic output.
We will not let the curtain fall on their careers or on the future of our cities.
Cuomo says he's building on a so far successful pilot program that is allowing a limited number of Buffalo Bills fans to attend the football team's playoff games. The governor plans to install rapid testing sites outside the events, as well as near some indoor venues, so that Broadway and other theaters can eventually reopen and restaurants could allow more indoor diners. The planned events will culminate in the 20th anniversary of the Tribeca Film Festival in Lower Manhattan. Manhattan. That was begun after another dark period in New York's history, the terrorist attack of September 11, 2001. The governor is also calling on philanthropic organizations, including the Mellon Foundation, to steer funds to community arts groups. But he warns that even with these efforts, it's not likely the economy and culture will go back to what it once was after the pandemic subsides.
The reality is not all businesses will reopen, and not all jobs are coming back as they were. Some of the changes we have seen this year will be permanent, and other changes preview new realities we have not even considered.
Cuomo believes that more people will continue to work from home, either full or part-time, and he wants to create more access to affordable high-speed internet for low-income workers. The governor says he'll propose a law requiring that internet providers offer Wi-Fi services at $15 a month for the state's poorest residents. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:15. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, Upper J artist Susan Hoffer shares why people, stories, and attention to small details are important to her work. That's coming up in just a few minutes.
Right now, we're listening to music by famous letter writer out of Plattsburgh. The 8 o'clock hour is supported by Fort de la Presentacion, helping to educate and recreate historical ventures of interest to the St. Lawrence region, fort1749.org, and the Au Sable River Association, monitoring lakes and streams and finding solutions that reduce road salt pollution. Learn more at ausablerriver.org.
The government of Ontario has declared a new state of emergency and issued a stay-at-home order beginning Thursday amid rising COVID cases. Emma Jacobs has more.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford said the drastic measures are needed to protect the health system from rising hospitalizations.
The system is on the brink of collapse. It's on the brink of being overwhelmed.
Residents are asked to only leave their homes for essential trips like grocery shopping and medical appointments, exercise, and essential work. Police will be authorized to issue tickets. Schools in several cities, including Toronto, will hold classes remotely through February 10th. Emma Jacobs, North Country Public Radio.
The U.S. and Canada have confirmed another extension of restrictions on non-essential travel across their shared border. The continuation until February 21st was confirmed by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who called it, quote, an important decision and one that will keep people on both sides of the border safe. The restrictions include exemptions for essential workers and certain family members. Canadians can still fly to the United States.
Harvard University's Institute of Politics will remove Congresswoman Elise Stefanik from its advisory board. It said the decision was not based on politics, but rather on false claims about the 2020 election. Harvard Dean Douglas Elmendorf wrote in a message to colleagues that he asked Stefanik to step down over her assertions about voter fraud that have, quote, no basis in evidence, unquote, and incorrect statements about court action surrounding the election. Stefanik declined to resign, and Elmendorf said he would take steps to remove her.
Stefanik, who graduated from Harvard in 2006, responded with a statement yesterday morning. She said that, quote, as a conservative Republican, it is a rite of passage and badge of honor to join the long line of leaders who have been boycotted, protested, and canceled by colleges and universities across America. The flap over her role at Harvard comes as the congresswoman faces increased pressure over her vote against certifying Pennsylvania's Electoral College votes last week after a pro-Trump mob stormed the U.S. Capitol.
Middlebury College in Vermont has decided to revoke an honorary degree presented to former mayor and presidential lawyer Rudy Giuliani. The editorial board of the college's student paper, The Campus, had called for the paper to take back, had called for the school to take back the honorary degree presented to Giuliani when he spoke at commencement in 2005, saying his attack on democratic institutions in inciting rioters who attacked the Capitol, quote, could not be further misaligned with the college's values.
The Adirondack Park Agency is letting the state develop plans for the park without enough input. That's according to Chad Dawson, one of the country's top experts on wilderness management. Dawson served on the park agency board for 4 years. He quit in protest last month after the APA voted to allow campfires near the Essex Chain Lakes without additional study. Dawson spoke about his decision to resign with David Lombardo, host of the public radio program Capitol Press Room.
What made you decide to leave when you did? And had you made up your mind about resigning going into that December board meeting?
No, I hadn't really made up my mind before that board meeting. But what came out was that it became more, to me, egregious that they were making decisions, albeit not huge decisions as some others we'd seen in years before, but important ones in which they refuse to look at the science involved in it. They refuse to look at alternatives and just simply flat out stated that the department wanted it the way they wanted it. And they really didn't care to look at other alternatives or didn't care to look at all the data. Very simple example, campfires in a particular area were to be permitted. And previously, the department had correctly in 2015 stated that fires shouldn't be allowed in very sensitive environmental areas, and that's why they'd originally banned them. And then they were saying, well, we don't really have information, but we're going to let it happen in this area, and we'll kind of watch it. And if it gets bad, we'll reinstitute the ban. And my point was, if you knew that smoking caused cancer, would you need to do more research? Because there's 50 years of research on the impacts of campfires on a particular environmental area, both the gathering of wood and the, you know, searching for wood in the environment and then burning it.
So with that rescinding of the campfire ban and an issue dealing with day use, did you just have enough at that point and just made a snap decision?
It was kind of a snap decision. I'd always looked at my term had been up for some period of time, and I'd always thought about, well, how will I know when I'm going to step off the board? And it just hit me that, well, I guess I know. It's right now.
In a year in review email from the Adirondack Council sent in December, the group wrote that as the year ends, quote, the APA is in crisis again. What do you think of that description, and how best should the agency move forward?
I think it's an apt description. The agency is understaffed, in my opinion, underfunded. There's not a board chair. There hasn't been one in a year. That makes the board less effective. And I think it's put a burden on the executive director in having to partially function as one of the leaders for the board. And is there a crisis? I think there is. If you look at over the years, their job is to protect the environment. Not everyone would agree that they've been completely successful because of the political pressures. I don't know how one changes that over time. But I still believe in the mission of the agency. I think it's an extraordinarily important function. And they have a very difficult job to do because saying no to people who want different things, who demand it, claim it's their right or their privilege, they really come before the board, and the board is put in a difficult position every time of saying no or yes, but under these circumstances, it's not an easy job. And it's not doesn't get easier from year to year because people do want many different things. Different political actors want to see things accomplished, the local level, the county level, the state level, and they all view the agency as an impediment. I view the agency as an important balancing function in our government, and I applaud their efforts.
Chad Dawson spoke with David Lombardo of the Capitol Press Room.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, a new exhibit in Lake George celebrates art and connections during a time of isolation. After that, stick around for Bird Note. Long-eared owls form communal nests during the winter months. We'll have more on that just ahead at 8:30. Right now, it's 28 degrees in Chateauguay, 29 in Malone, 30 degrees in Adams, 25 degrees in Lake Placid. We can expect pretty cloudy days for the next couple of days, with highs around 30 degrees for the next few days. Well, over the last several months, artist Susan Hoffer says she found painting as a way to learn more about her neighbors and friends in the Adirondacks. A new exhibit of her work opens in the Courthouse Gallery at the Lake George Arts Project on Saturday, and much of her art focuses on what she calls the experience of real or perceived isolation that's a result of geographical place and in the ways we use technology to form connections.
Susan Hoffer grew up on Long Island, moved to the Adirondacks in 2009, and teaches art at North Country Community College. I spoke with the Upper J artist about some of the pieces in her upcoming Lake George show and why people, stories, and attention to small details are important in her work.
My work is always really about documenting what people are experiencing, whether it's, you know, something somebody said in the news or something someone is, we're all worried about. The thing that is really pressing on people's experiences now is the isolation from the pandemic. And so there's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of community outreach, you know, people talking about what they're experiencing. Also people helping each other, you know. For example, in the painting that I did, it's my husband. It's called The Moment You Understand White Privilege and Decide to Act for the Greater Good. He was reflecting one morning, you know, that we had breakfast. You know, he was chopping up fruit for a lovely breakfast, and at the same time we were watching the news and we were looking at these long lines, you know, people that didn't have food. And so he made this decision at that moment, you know, that he really needed to do something. He needed to, you know, go out and help and donate. And so that's pretty much what triggered that painting. And also his resolve, you know. And in contrast, there's another painting, and it's called It Didn't Have to Be This Bad, Friday, July 10th, 2020, 125,590 dead. This painting it came about through a conversation with my colleague, Summer. She's a young, very good teacher at North Country Community College. And, you know, after we went online and, you know, her job really altered. And so she lost maybe more than a third of her income. So she wasn't able to afford her apartment. She moved back home to Potsdam. Then she moved again. And it just became very difficult for her. And her comment to me was, oh, Susan, it didn't have to be this bad, you know. And I thought, you know, Summer, you're right. Things didn't need to be this bad. So that's what that painting is about.
You see, as you're painting, it's like a conversation. Am I getting that right? That as you're putting a piece together? Yeah. Tell us, what do you mean by that?
So I start with a conversation that I have had with the different people, and I take a lot of photographic references, and I start putting parts of photographs together in a painting. But then as I remember more of my conversation, what was important to them, for example, as they revealed their story, I start adding things, you know. And so basically what I would do is just go out, find these objects, ask them for these objects, bring them back to my studio, and place them in the painting as well. So, you know, I'm really trying to stimulate conversations, both between the viewer and the person that the painting is about, but as well me, as I remember. One example of that is the painting I did of Dana. She's a Holocaust survivor. I just finished that one a few days ago. She's in her late 80s, and she wrote a book. It's called My Nine Lives, and she talks about her experience in the Warsaw Ghetto, how she was smuggled out, and how she ended up in Lake Clear, New York. So as I painted that story, Dana's story, I read her book. I didn't know some things, like, for example, how the Polish Catholic nuns were helping the Jewish children out of the ghetto and bringing them to safety and hiding them, you know. So these are the sorts of things that are wonderful for me. It's a way to get to know the depth of experience of people that are my neighbors. Well, we often focus on our differences between urban and rural and suburban, and we even do that within the Adirondack Park. Mm-hmm. But I'm realizing that we have actually more in common with each other than what our differences suggest. And that's really what I'm focusing on, especially at a time that's very isolating, as well in an area that can be very isolating, like in the Adirondack Park.
That's Upper J artist Susan Hoffer. Her new exhibit of her work opens in the Courthouse Gallery at the Lake George Arts Project on Saturday. And she'll host an online talk about her artwork on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. You can find more information at lakegeorgearts.org and images of her work at our website, ncpr.org.
Time now is 8:31. Bird Note coming up next, and this hour's programming is supported by Mountain Orthotic and Prosthetic Services, committed to providing professional and compassionate care in Lake Placid and Plattsburgh. Details and referrals at mountainonp.com.
This is Bird Note. The low-pitched hoot of a long-eared owl can carry for half a mile. The bird flies low across open fields in the dark, listening intently for rodent prey. When it's not hunting, the owl perches in a dense stand of trees. It's a slender owl with two long feather tufts sticking straight up like ears on top of its head. Its muted feathers may act as camouflage with the surrounding leaves, but you can't miss this owl's intense yellow eyes and orangey-brown face. Long-eared owls live across North America and temperate Europe and Asia. During the spring mating season, males display to females in zigzag flight while clapping their wings together. In winter, the owls may form communal roosts of up to 100 birds. In some areas, long-eared owl populations are declining due to habitat loss. Open farm fields where the owls once hunted have reverted to deciduous woods or morphed into housing tracts. Wildlife advocates suggest helping the owls by preserving open, fallow fields and by avoiding pesticides that find their way into the owl's prey. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It's 8:33. Thanks for listening to the 8 o'clock hour this morning. And just a reminder that coming up at 9 o'clock, we're off to special coverage from NPR as the House of Representatives resumes impeachment proceedings against President Trump. That's scheduled to start at 9 o'clock this morning and probably will continue into the evening. Again, stay tuned. It's coming up at 9 o'clock.
Yes, that we are coming up on the end of the show for the day. Morning Edition is coming up in just a few minutes before we switch to that special coverage. We'll take a look at President Trump, who made a quick trip to the southern border to highlight his immigration agenda. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Till tomorrow, I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Moe. Be well.